Sharon Osbourne. Here she is again. She's arrived in our conversation on the Colleen and Bradley Show, My Talk 1071. Streaming live at mytalk1071.com. Everything Entertainment. Colleen Lindstrom, Bradley Trainer.
Hi.
What is she? What did she do? What's going? What did she do?
So the saga continues, and this time, you guys, Sharon Osbourne's got receipts, and she's dropping them. Okay, what does that mean? What receipts does Sharon Osbourne have? And I almost called them something, and it would have been offensive. So I'm glad I didn't. But Sharon Osbourne has gone back and forth. Well, she went bye-bye in the car after being very, very unprofessional, arguably culturally insensitive at the least, racist at the worst. Mm. It's a long story. We've talked about it at length. However, it resulted in her leaving her role at The Talk. Right. And yesterday
she took a walk from the talk.
She walked from the talk. I like that. Mm. Yesterday we talked about Cheryl Underwood and how we continue to just be happy. I'm trying to think of the word. We continued to be impressed, perhaps, by the behavior, the professional behavior of one Cheryl Underwood, not for any particular reason. Other than the way she has handled this drama as imposed by Sharon Osbourne. So in the midst of Sharon Osbourne's chaos, Cheryl performed like a consummate professional as people, I think it's safe to say, if I may be so bold, on our behalf, to say that in our business, like, you know, someone who can sort of just be an even keel in the midst of a storm deserves some mad props and respect. And we gave her some yesterday when she opened up in her podcast about what went down between, not really between her and Sharon, but what went down as Sharon sort of melted down live on stage in a TV show.
Which actually, I think that is part of the point, right? Is that in the telling of the story, you realize that Cheryl Underwood did not hitch herself to the wagon. She allowed Sharon to have her own meltdown without involving herself or hooking herself into that, which again is the other piece that makes us have a ton of respect for, if I may be so bold as to speak for us, have a ton of respect for Cheryl Underwood, because at any point she had a choice that she could have engaged in a different way in this conversation, and she has chosen to be professional throughout. Yeah. Where it, and that is in stark contrast to the lack of professionalism we've seen from Sharon Osbourne.
Well, in the vein of unprofessionalism, Sharon Osbourne is now dropping some messages. And this actually was brought to our attention by a listener yesterday. Like, hey, devil's advocate, you know, Cheryl says that Sharon never reached out to her, but Sharon is dropping some text messages. Interesting. Well, let's take a look at these. She apparently is refuting what Cheryl said, the claim that she never apologized after their on-air row. But what I want to read this to you, but then I want to have the reaction.
Okay. And
normally I just have the reaction, but it's important to read the thing so people can go along with us.
Okay.
And here's the screen cap of a text Sharon alleges she sent to Cheryl Friday, March 12th, 7:28 p.m. to Cheryl. Cheryl, and I actually am not going to read this whole thing because this is just this is a lot, but let's do a little bit. Cheryl, my heart is heavy and I'm deeply saddened by the events that transpired Wednesday. I don't want to lose my true friend forever over this. I'm sorry for telling you to bleep off during the break. I'm sorry for accusing you of fake crying while we were live on air. And I'm sorry for losing my temper with you. I felt shocked, scared, and saddened by what felt like was a blindsided attack. You know me. You know how I've always had your back. We've outlasted everyone on this show, and that's because we've always been a team and had each other's backs. I consider you a genuine friend. If you want to talk on the phone over the weekend, I'm here. Once again, from the bottom of my heart, I'm sorry, she goes on. But does anything strike you about that?
Yeah, a couple things strike me about that. Number one, it puts Sharon Osbourne at the center. Mm-hmm. It does not center Cheryl.
Thank you.
And number two, it puts the emotional labor onto Cheryl to bridge the gap. Did I get them right?
Thank you. I mean, I don't care what your response was insofar as it's your response, and I'm happy. Like, there was no right answer is what right. I'm trying okay. to say. Like, this was not a quiz, but it just happens that we both had the same reaction yeah. to this text. Because to me, when I read it, like you, I was like, sounds like Sharon's putting a lot on Cheryl right now. Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound like an apology to me. Mm-mm. And also, like, sure, you reached out to her and thought you were apologizing, and now you feel like you've caught Cheryl. Like, are you a genuine friend who just leaked the text that you sent, the private text that you sent to Cheryl?
And then there's that.
Are you a true friend?
Are you a
genuine friend who have each other's back?
Because the reason that you did that is to prove that Cheryl was wrong.
It sounded like, did it not, that she's just covering her bases?
Oh, yeah.
In this, like, when you say things, like, I can just hear her, like, I am putting this on paper so it's clear. And, like, it's like she knew full well that one day this text would see the light of day because it's written for an audience and it's not Cheryl Underwood.
No.
When you say things like, I'm sorry for telling you, like, she's being so specific. I'm sorry for telling you to bleep off during the break. I'm sorry for accusing you of fake crying while we were live on the air. Also, like, there's a little bit of a knife turn in there. Like, you know, like, she's basically reiterating what she accused her of, as if to say, you did those things.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm going to overlook it because we've got each other's, do you? I felt shocked, scared, and saddened. Oh, so Cheryl's supposed to have empathy for you in that?
Well, and then what she does next, the turn she takes where she says, you know me, you know how I've always had your back. It's like she's telling her how to feel and what to think.
Yes.
Yes. It is very Sharon
focused. We've outlasted everyone on the show now trying to, like, rope her in, like,
we're together.
Girl, we're in this together. And if you don't feel that way, there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, does a person who has your back drop text to the media?
Yeah, no.
So you only have their back until the narrative doesn't serve you, which, let's just remember, is what got us into this mess in the first place,
right.
Which means, ergo, at the end of the day, the common denominator here is Sharon Osbourne is a mess mm-hmm. and can't help herself. She cannot. Everything that comes out of Sharon Osbourne's mouth is in service of Sharon.
I think there's more.
Oh, yeah. It goes on.
Oh, geez. Okay, well, go, please. Let's go. More, please.
Hi, Cheryl. I know you're taking space, and I don't want to sadden. Oh, wait, no.
Disrespect that.
I don't want to disrespect that. I'm just reaching out because I want you to know I'm thinking about you. Now, this came, by the way, that first text came Friday at 7:28.
Mm-hmm.
And then this next text comes the following Monday mm-hmm. at 1:45 in the afternoon. I want you to know I'm thinking about you. If you're willing, can we talk before Wednesday? Big kiss.
Okay, that big kiss is like a big kiss off. I mean, that when people do that.
Also,
it doesn't feel genuine, is all I'm trying to say.
Also, a text, it's just a weird choice to reach out, right? Like, but you want her to,
like, She's inviting her to do the labor.
Yeah, again.
That's what she's doing.
You just sent off a text, and, like, if she doesn't respond, then you can be like, well, I tried.
Yeah.
I tried. I did my part.
Right.
And Cheryl's like, excuse me.
Well, and the thing about doing it over text is what?
It doesn't require any effort.
There's a paper trail, right? So she's not going to make the phone call because then what? How is she going to prove that she said what she said or did what she did?
Well, and
see what I'm saying?
Oh, exactly. And then she goes on Thursday. So that was Monday. On Thursday, she texts, Cheryl, I'm thinking about you. Hope you are well. Sending my love.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if Cheryl didn't respond to you on Friday the week before.
Yeah.
Girl, stop. Because now you just look sad.
Yeah.
And, like, or more cynically, manipulative.
Well, and Cheryl knows that something's going on. Just FYI, you don't have to keep reminding her that there's a schism.
Yeah, because by the way, Cheryl still has her job.
Yes. So Cheryl will get to you. Don't worry, if she wants to, right? Like, you don't have to keep reminding her that you're there and waiting. And then again, inviting her to do the emotional labor.
And then to come out and be like, oh no, I reached out to her. Look at, she's lying.
It's just gross.
No, she's not lying.
It's just gross.
You're lying.
You lying liar.
You lying liar. We see you, Sharon. I hope you're listening. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I do.
No, but I mean, yeah, here's the thing. And this is where I will give her, I don't want to say credit. I will give her a little benefit of the doubt. What I'm learning about Sharon Osbourne is that ownership of her own behavior and communication is not her strength.
Oh, that's interesting. What does she do for a living?
Right. Which is part of the problem, is that she communicates.
So now can we take a step back and say, when is the world going to stop? And by world, I mean corporations who employ people specifically in this business. When are they going to stop rewarding this behavior?
I don't know.
Because she is a self-created CBS, whomever you want to put this at the feet of, responsible for employing her in that job. This is not news. Like, that behavior from Sharon, there's nothing new about it. It's not a bug. It's a feature. And she was chosen because of that.
Because that feature is the thing that ends up getting them ratings. Yeah. Is somebody who just shoots from the hip, doesn't really care how things land, is one of those people who's going to be, I'm not even sorry about it. I say what I think. I call them like I see them.
The one thing you can say about that Sharon Osbourne, she's just going to tell you what she thinks. I got news for you. You can walk down the street today and find people who will tell you what they think. And just because they got thinks coming out their mouth, don't mean you should hear them. Or that they should be paid for the privilege.
Meanwhile, I do just want to say we love our jobs. And we want to thank you all for listening to our thinks.
Yeah, but see, our thinks is kind of thinkable. We think about our thinks.
Well, we try to think about our thinks, but sometimes thinks come out.
Look, sometimes we set off stink bombs.
It happens.
And make poop jokes.
It happens.
Okay. Can we think about the time?
We will own our thanks, and we will own the fact that we are over time. When we come back on the Colleen and Bradley show, my favorite moment of yesterday. My favorite moment of yesterday.
Which was?
Oh, you'll find out after this on My Talk 107.1. Okay. This is the Colleen and Bradley show, My Talk 107.1, streaming live at mytalk1071.com. Everything Entertainment. Colleen Lindstrom, Bradley Trainer.
Hi.
I wanted to share with you one of my favorite moments from yesterday.
Which was?
Okay, so here's what had happened. So, okay, there's a lot going on in Minneapolis right now. We've got a lot of reporters in town, and that's all because of the trial that's occurring as we speak, the former officer Derek Chauvin and the death of George Floyd, which is a sad occurrence. It is something that I know a lot of people are paying attention to. And I certainly have been, you know, glued to the television myself. But this moment when the CNN reporter Josh Campbell was doing a live cutaway from downtown Minneapolis right around 1 o'clock p.m. yesterday. Now, yesterday was what day of the week?
Yesterday was Wednesday.
It was also the first Wednesday in the month of April.
Springtime. Yes.
What happens, everybody in Minnesota knows, 1 o'clock, we could seriously set our clocks by this. 1 o'clock every first Wednesday of every month in the spring and summer, what do we get?
A siren. It's not a foghorn.
Without
I would love fail. A foghorn.
That is when we test the tornado sirens.
Disaster preparedness.
That's right.
And you all just know it. Like, listen, I always say, you know, woe be unto the tornado that strikes at 1 o'clock on the first Wednesday of a month, because we won't believe those sirens.
Yeah.
So I have always been very nervous about that, and I'm not joking. So here's what happens when Josh Campbell is talking to CNN Studios from downtown Minneapolis during a live cutaway around 1 o'clock yesterday.
These hypotheticals for being that person, but I'm gonna take you off TV. I'm gonna make sure you're okay. Whatever's going on around you is okay.
I'm gonna take you off TV.
We're gonna time out. I promise we'll bring you back. Right, that's kind of the right decision. Josh Campbell standing by there.
Kind of the right decision.
I mean, you guys, it's kind of the right decision, right?
Yeah, the right decision.
Is it though?
Safety first.
Maybe he.
And the best part about this is, to everybody in Minnesota, we're laughing because we're like, y'all, it has, that's not, it's fine.
Yeah, it happens every month.
Now, to be fair, of course, they don't know this because it's a Minnesota thing you wouldn't understand.
Because I saw this and I thought to myself, why is she, I mean, I get it. She's in the role that she's in and she can. What is that?
We gotta go.
Oh, is it the first Wednesday?
Yeah, it's the tornado siren that happens.
No, anyway, on her show. Anyway, it's all good. It's all good.
I just think that's,
is it?
That's like our revenge for grape salad.
Yeah. We got you.
Did we? When we come back on the Colleen and Bradley show, Lord and Lady D-Bag. After this. Lucy, prove it. Celebrities behaving badly. We love to tell you about them on the Colleen and Bradley show. My Talk 1071, streaming live at mytalk1071.com. Everything Entertainment, Colleen Lindstrom, Bradley Trainer.
Hi.
We have a name for those celebrities behaving badly, and that name is
D-Bags.
Presenting Lord and Lady Douchebag of the Day.
Who's your D-Bag?
Scott Rudin, who we mentioned earlier today because he is an EGOT winner.
Oh, awkward.
Yes. Now, you might hear that name and go, I don't know that person. I've never heard of him.
Yeah, most celebrity? People probably not.
He is a celebrity, though. He is the producer behind a lot of movies that you know, including but not limited to The Social Network. He also produced Broadway's To Kill a Mockingbird. And what's interesting about this and the reason he's the D-bag today is because I spent a little time this morning reading through a report in The Hollywood Reporter. So it's actually the report.
Of the report.
Of the report of many of his former employees coming forward and talking about his incredibly abusive behavior.
Yeah, really shocking.
It is super shocking. And, you know, it was interesting because there are stories of incidents that took place as early as 2012 and the intervening years with this producer, Scott Rudin. And I thought, you know, I feel like we talked about a lot of abusive behaviors during the Me Too movement, the early kind of Harvey Weinstein moments. And some of these stories kind of came out of the woodwork. Now, his stuff is not sexually abusive. It's just straight up
abusive,
like, abusive. And so I felt like we missed an opportunity there, right? To like open the door and have that conversation, but we're having it now. It is so interesting, to read through stories of employees of his having, been subject to him throwing computer monitors at one assistant that rendered him incapacitated to the point that he had to go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
That producer, by the way, not speaking public, or that assistant not speaking publicly about that incident. But it has been an open secret in Hollywood for quite some time that this guy is just straight up abusive to people.
Yeah, it's shocking to think that someone after behavior like that would be allowed to continue in their role. I think that's a little different now, but so it's a good thing that these stories are, I don't want to say coming to light, because I think we knew these stories actually a while ago, but that they're being held, taken to account now, even if it is a little tardy to the party.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I'll just give you real quick a couple of the scenes, just because you can hear what a D-bag this guy is. He fired one assistant and then pulled the chair out from under them so that they would literally fall down in front of everybody. One of his assistants had type 1 diabetes, and she had arranged it such that she would she accepted that she had to start work at 5 a.m. That was what he required of her. But she made they made an allowance for her so she could work out for a half hour in the morning time because it was part of her health condition. And he ended up firing her for that, which is like not even legal. there's another story about a time that he got so angry he threw a bowl at somebody, like a glass bowl, and it shattered, and then he stomped off into the other room and started like throwing a napkin dispenser around. He just sounds like a very angry man. And now these stories are starting to bubble up. And again, you might not immediately know his name, but you would know things he's involved in. He's the producer behind the Book of Mormon. I mean, he's done a lot of really big projects, and this could be potentially career altering.
Yeah, you know, this is just part and parcel of something we talk about a lot on this show, and whether it's Me Too or Sharon Osbourne, it really goes, it's, or, you know, name the Kardashians, spin the wheel. It's just that when you garner a certain audience that garners a certain amount of money, in whether it's advertising or jobs, deals of, you know, whatever kind and whatever business we're talking about, in this case, it's the entertainment industry, the more power you wield in that regard, the more privilege you're given, and that privilege is abused in some cases. And hopefully, if the Me Too movement has taught us anything, and thank God to all the women who've, you know, and it's not just women, but for the most part, women who were sort of leading this charge for bringing this stuff to the light. Because sure, it holds a few individuals accountable that are like really, to use an overused, mostly inappropriately so term, few bad apples. Mm-hmm. But those few bad apples actually are very beneficial much further down on the food chain. So that I think behavior that they exhibited is not going to be tolerated at a lower level in a way that it ubiquitously would have been tolerated before.
Right.
Like, and that could, you know, that could be in places as far flung as, like, you know, Bob's chowder hut. I'm just making something so, like, you know, boring and small potatoes, right? Like, the symbolism of somebody like Harvey Weinstein being taken down has benefits for people at a much lower influenced place in society.
Like, yeah, status, place. Yeah. Anywho, you'll be hearing Scott Rudin's name more and more, I'm sure, as these stories start to get teased out in other places.
And rightly so.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely. Like,
my point is just that it's beneficial for society all over the place when people that you don't think matter are held accountable.
Absolutely. Who's your D-bag?
My D-bag is, on a much less serious note, Hello Magazine!
Hello!
And mostly for this article,
yeah,
they
no
are
kidding.
Frequent
yeah.
flyers,
they've
right?
Turned their
they've,
wings.
Been, they've been showing up a lot.
Yes, mm-hmm. they have. And it all has to do with this article about Rebel Wilson's sister, because we know that Rebel Wilson is on a celebrity and tabloid hiatus.
Right. Because she took a break from her insties because she has to get into a role.
Mm-hmm. So now they're looking at her sister, because her sister is basically her. And I kind of want to point my finger at Rebel Wilson, because one wonders if she's pushing her sister out there, like, hey, we'll get you some attention while I'm in the background. That I would not put past her, based on, you know, Rebel's ability to manipulate the media.
Which is like what she's been doing for the last...
Yeah.
year.
But I have no proof of that, and so that is just my own opinion, and therefore what I will do instead is point my finger directly at Hello Magazine, which gave us this whole story about how Rebel Wilson's sister is stealing the show in her sun-soaked swimsuit selfie. The Cats actress is very close to her younger sibling, and they try to pass off this article as, like, they're basically twinsies. And they pull a photo from her Instagram, and you can see the photo. It's just her sister, by the way, is Anachi. That I don't think is her real name. And because none
No, I think you're right, because Rebel's real name isn't Rebel either.
Yeah. So none of the children go by, I believe, their given name. And Anachi is one of those people as well. And if you look at the photo.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't look like Rebel Wilson to me.
Yeah, I don't really. I saw that headline. Or it's not the headline. It says, oh, look-alike younger sister. It's in the first sentence. Yeah. And I was like, oh, where's her lookalike younger sister? I see that sister.
Yeah, Rebel Wilson is
but I don't see the lookalike one.
Rebel Wilson is taking a break from social media, but her lookalike younger sister, Anachi, is doing a great job filling in for her. No, it's just her sister on a floaty in a pool.
Well, what's really funny, too, is that there's a video of the two of them wearing matching pajamas, and then another picture of them wearing matching swimsuits. And I thought,
so that means they must be
related. Is that the lookalike piece? They were wearing the same clothing?
Yeah.
I mean, my mom used to dress my sister and I like that when we were three. So right? Obviously they're sisters.
They're obviously sisters.
Obviously.
Obviously sisters, but they're obviously not in the same place because Anachi, I don't even know if I'm saying that right, Anachi, I don't know.
Anarchy? Her real name is Anarchy? Annalise.
Yeah.
But she prefers to be called Anachi.
Anarchy, Anachi.
Which, according to Distractify, well, Distractify.com, which we know is a totally reliable
of
website,
course.
Says that Anachi is similar to the word anarchy. Okay. So
I wonder if it's Anarchy. I wonder if she goes by Anarchy.
Oh, that could be. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So on the website, names.org.
So please take that for
two people from California agree that the name Anarchy or Anarchy is of Chinese origin and means angelic peace.
No, I mean, there might be an equivalent, right? But I
ooh, here's a pronouncer. Here, you can play this, Holly.
Oh, well, please.
Here, I'm gonna provide this for you.
Well, Rebel's other two siblings, according to Distractify, are Liberty and Riot. R-Y-O-T.
Yeah, they all go by different names.
They chose... that was a choose-your-own-adventure.
Back to the idea that for some reason they are besties... Or, excuse me, they're twinsies. Oh, I was just going to say that they're in different places. So she stayed in the United States while, of course, Rebel is over in the UK acting.
Getting into her deep role.
Which is why she can't be with us right now on social media.
Yes.
So her sister is playing the role for her. Anyway, hello, do better. And
goodbye.
Goodbye, exclamation point. It just further indicates to me the likelihood that perhaps Hello Magazine is just open for business. And if you have a PR person willing to pay the right price, you can get your client headlines.
Holly, can we just hear the how to pronounce that so we can close the loop on that, so when we see her again we know what to call her?
Anachi.
Oh.
Anachi.
Is that her?
No, that's a names.org mm-hmm. YouTube
Anachi.
Clip.
Right.
Anachi.
So Anachi Wilson. I don't even know if she goes by Wilson, but
she does.
Rebel's
yes.
sister.
When we come back on the Colleen and Bradley show, we've got another D-bag that we have to introduce you to. It's a little double down action after this on My Talk 107.1. Thank you, Holly. This is the Colleen and Bradley show on My Talk 107.1, streaming live at MyTalk1071.com. Everything Entertainment. Colleen Lindstrom, Bradley Trainer.
Hi.
Sometimes we have so many D-bags, we need to create another space for them, and we call it a little D-bag double down.
Presenting Lord and Lady Douchebag of the Day.
Who is our D-bag double down?
I really want to make it this story about... I just saw this video and was reminded, and I think a listener sent us this thing yesterday about Mrs. Singapore. Or not Mrs. Singapore, Mrs. Sri Lanka, perhaps? Anyway, did you see that story about how she snatched the crown?
Yes.
Oh my God, watch that video if you haven't seen it. Anyway, that's not why we're here. The D-bag double down for this segment is one D-list appropriate. Zach Avery, a D-list actor by the name of Zach Avery, who is 34 years old.
I'm willing to bet you there were some people who gasped when you said Zach
Avery. Oh, not Zach
Avery.
Efron. And
Zach
why would
Avery.
I ever call him D-list?
That would be wrong.
That would
A-list
be lies.
Always in your mind.
You would only know him from such movies as Fury, Last Moment of Clarity, Hell is Where the Home Is, and You're Not Alone. I've never heard of any
never
of those movies.
Heard of any of them.
But he is now most known for his role as a criminal in a $690 million Ponzi scheme. Woo!
Woof.
So I saw...
Hey.
Huh? What?
Sorry. Whenever people say Ponzi scheme, I think Fonzie scheme.
Oh, Fonzie. That's cute. Well, Fonzie didn't have a Ponzi scheme. Mm-mm. A Ponzi scheme, of course, basically just a pyramid scheme to bilk a bunch of people out of money and not pay them back. And that's exactly what this 34-year-old D-lister was able to pull off. Again, just short of $1 billion.
That's crazy.
This Hollywood Ponzi scheme involved such big names as HBO and Netflix. And it all had to do, because I bet, unless you've read the details, you're like, well, how does somebody, what does somebody, how, what? You have a lot of questions.
Somebody, what does, how, what?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I read about this, of course, I read the report of the report, and how this Ponzi scheme worked is he created this company, and the company was called One, and I'm assuming it's One, the number one, in MM. Don't know what that stands for.
1-inch millimeter.
1-inch millimeter. Mm. Yeah, 1-inch millimeter capital LLC. He created this company. And then basically he said, like, look, I am really good at getting things licensed, getting movies licensed in different markets. And I think specifically it was Latin America, where he's like, I can get these shows licensed. I've worked with HBO and it's gotten me millions and it returns like... So he would say, like, if you give me this, I can then invest this, and that will give us this percentage return. Something basically, like, that's the thumbnail.
Okay.
So he was able to get people to give him literally tens of millions of dollars again and again and again and again and again to do these strategic partnerships with such outfits as Netflix, as I said, HBO, Sony, and a bunch of other people, created these elaborate marketing materials and sort of legalese-filled documents that indicated, oh, this is all on the up and up.
Yeah.
But people clearly didn't do the homework that they should have been doing. And it's just so fascinating to me that people that can write checks at this level...
don't even do their due diligence?
Yeah.
To make sure it's legit?
Yeah.
How did he get found out?
That's a good question. I don't know the specific thing, but I know that what they were able to do, the FBI said, is that when he failed to make payments, because again, it's a Ponzi scheme, right? So he's collecting all this money, and then there are people like, wait a minute, where's my money in return? And he's like, oh, just hold on a minute, it's fine. And that's what led them to uncover this entire scheme. In 5 years, he was able to raise $690 million from investors. And he used, and again, this is why they claim that this was a Ponzi scheme, not that he was actually doing anything with the money legitimately. He was able to purchase a house, live a lavish lifestyle.
Wow.
And pay back some, you know, certain, because again, Ponzi scheme, right? Like, you have enough money, you got to get more money to pay back the initial money. But once, if that runs out, if the money that you're bringing in is running out and you're skimming too much off the top, then you can't pay back the people that are expecting to get a return.
Right.
That works only so far as you're able to continue to bring money in, which he was not able to do, which again, sort of then becomes a house of cards. And then you got people just standing there going, wait a minute, my 35% from your Netflix deal never showed up. What happened?
I have the dumbest, this is the dumbest question. And I'm asking
it knowing. Well, I have a lot of dumb answers, so we're in good company.
So dumb. Does a person who runs a Ponzi scheme like this, does he go into it going, I'm going to start a Ponzi scheme? Or does he authentically start to get himself into trouble and he can't keep up with his
some Ponzi stuff. Schemes are like that. This one, it doesn't appear that way because, again, he's creating something out of whole cloth. Sure. That didn't exist. He created this company saying he was going to do this thing, created a bunch of materials indicating how this would all work with none of that actually existing. He
right.
Did not
so,
have
like,
any relationship with
okay.
Yeah, so he didn't have any, in this case, relationship with Netflix or HBO. But you know, but there are Ponzi schemes where people do have every intention of, you know, doing the thing that they say they're going to do. The problem is they get in over their head. They're right. Like, if I just get enough money,
then I can pay back the things I need
to
pay back.
Yeah, but then if that money doesn't come in, you're like, well, then I got to start robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Right.
And pretty soon Paul is like, why are you robbing Peter? And Peter's like, where's my money?
So here's my other, this isn't a question.
These are all good questions.
My thing is like, did he have help? Was it just him or did he have employees that helped him? Because this just feels like a lot of work. And what I really want to say is if he could have just harnessed all of this hard work for good and not evil, he could probably be making similar kind of money.
Yeah, well, if he could literally do the thing, right?
Right.
Like, but he wasn't doing any of that thing. So there was nothing altruistic about any of this.
No, I guess what I'm saying is to even go through the motions of creating the story and then creating the materials to try to prove a thing that isn't actual, like, that's talent. There's talent in that.
Yeah. Oh, so, no, he's certainly, actor is a good profession for him.
True.
Right? The problem is he needs to use his powers for good and not evil. As to the question about other people, it wasn't referenced in this article, whether he had like a big ass, big butt, group of people around him, but it seemed like this was all about him for the most part.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen to him? Is he going to be put away for a long time?
He's facing a... of prison, 20 years in prison, if convicted. I just thought this is so... I just think the cojones on a person, the ego on a person, the megalomaniacalness of a person...
Maybe that's what the MM stands for.
Yeah, right. Megalomaniac of a person to go out and buy a home and not wonder, like... Or not wonder, rather, not be concerned that at some point you might be found out. Like, you think you're so smart that you're going to pull the wool over people's eyes forever. And nobody's ever going to catch up.
Like, he legitimately lied about owning the rights to a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. Like, you could Google that, people.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. So there's a lot of D-bags and crazy, stupid idiots involved in that story.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back on the Colleen and Bradley Show, what kinds of jeans did you love that are no longer in style? 651-641-1071.